Live from the Ghost Hunter Store. Brought to you by the Shadowlands, South Jersey Ghost Research, and the Ghost Hunter Store. Here's some paranormal straight talk with your hosts, Dave Giuliano and Marty Hayes.
So, hey, welcome all you podcast listeners. You already missed the first 10 minutes of the show, but
you're going to at least you get the rest of it.
You'll get the rest of it. We're talking with trainees, new trainees from South Jersey Ghost Research and about the training process of South Jersey Ghost Research. See, every time I think we got over that hurdle of the technical difficulty, It's mostly human error. It's not really technical difficulty, but anyway, with the religious tolerance, you would think that it is that way now.
Yes.
But you'd be surprised how many people really do send those things back, along with the Ouija board, too. A lot of people, now, I have my opinion on the Ouija board, but my opinion is based on not only what I was trained a certain way, but then I now got to see it firsthand. So my training did match up with everything I was told and trained matched up to what I've seen so far.
What is that?
That it's, if you're going to use a Ouija board, you are the kind of person that if someone knocked on the door, your door at 2 a.m. in the morning, you would just open the door right away. You wouldn't look out the peephole. You wouldn't check the window. You wouldn't ask who it is. You would just open the door and let them in. That's what using the Ouija board is. And it does, has nothing to do with it being made of cardboard and plastic, because we can take a piece of paper and a Dixie cup right now and make one. You know, get some chalk out in the street.
You can print them offline.
Right.
I've seen that people do that.
They got phones for the iPhone.
They got the
now.
Apps, yep.
So it doesn't matter. It's that some people are sensitive and don't realize it. Some spirits are waiting for an opportunity. And the bad stuff can come through that way. Does it always happen? No. But you run that risk.
And there are people that use them and know how to use them properly. And get a lot of good use out of them. But for a majority of the people, especially, you know, people that are just picking it up off the shelf because they think it's a game, it's bad news.
And for people who are out there listening saying, oh, here goes, they're bad-mouthing the Ouija board.
No, not at all.
The Ouija board can be a useful tool used properly.
Yes.
Are we going to tell you how to use it properly? No.
No.
Because we tell you right away, all of a sudden, you've listened to us after 5 minutes, you think you know how you're doing it right, and then you're going to try it, and then you're going to call us because you've got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So the people who are using it out there, it is a useful tool. Continue to use it. You know how to use it safely.
Right.
Everybody else, if you don't know how to use it safely and you're never taught, then don't play with it. It's the same thing. We run that fine line with everything.
You have to do research on it. I mean, you know, I read cards, and I didn't just jump in and start reading cards because, you know, who am I talking to? You know, who's answering those cards? Everything has to be. You have to learn. You have to research it. You have to learn how to do it properly before you actually can do it.
I had like 3 sets of cards, but I never really did anything except flipping them over for myself until I took your class.
Right.
I never actually gave a reading for anybody because I was afraid of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Who was manipulating the cards?
Right.
Until I learned properly from someone else who knew how to use them, you know, I didn't want to go any further with it.
Yeah.
Until I've told people about Ouija boards and. They're like, oh, I played with them as a kid, and I never had a problem. I said, well, you're lucky.
Yeah. We've had clients that have played with them, and, you know, 4 out of 5 of them are having major issues, you know? So.
And other people never have anything. Or maybe they didn't realize they had anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you never know. It's not worth the risk. It really is like Russian roulette. Mm-hmm. I mean, you spin the chamber, you know, 5 out of 6 times, you're okay.
Yeah.
You know, but are you willing to take that chance? That's why we actually confiscate the boards when we go to our preliminary visits. If there's a board in the house, even if they have never used it in a long period of time, it doesn't seem to have even factored into the case at all. There's the temptation of, say, we come out and we do an investigation and they don't get enough information from us, that temptation of that board being there. Now, certainly they could go buy another board, and we have had clients do that too.
Sure, yeah.
But before we go in, I'm going to make sure we remove the board and we tell them why we're removing it. And if they're not okay with us removing it, there's a flag right there. Why don't they want us to take the board? Because I'll even pay them for the board if they really want to. If that's an issue,
yeah.
I'll buy it from them because we're going to go and take care of the board and, you know, pretty much disable its ability to do any harm. But you'd be surprised how that has actually you know, scuttled a couple of investigations where they didn't want to give up the board at all. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the interview and the conversation is over. Yeah. You need to help us. If we can't help us unless you're going to help us help you. If you're not willing to do the things that we're asking, something simple like that.
Right.
If you're that attached to the board, there's a problem to begin with. And you're probably not telling us the whole story then. Mm-hmm. So we need to move on from and find other people who are more willing to accept the help. Now, the other question I think that people always ask is they are curious about the what pets do you have? Because that doesn't seem to fit into the whole thing either.
Yeah, well pets are a natural indicator of what type of activity you may or may not have. I wouldn't say my house is haunted. I'd say that there's somebody that hangs around. And when I'm on my second dog now, but my first dog used to run from the kitchen to the bottom of the steps barking, and there was nobody there. Now, the dog I have now, he really doesn't pick up on it, and every once in a while, I'll be looking at TV, and I'll catch something out of the corner of my eye, and I know there's nobody there. And it's not like, it could be a shadow, or it could be just somebody just walking by. But as far as any other kind of experience, I haven't had them, and from listening to you guys on the radio show, one of your big things is don't investigate your own house. And I've always wanted to, but I don't want to bring anything out that you know is going to show up.
If part of what helps or will get spirits more active is by giving them recognition, even human spirits, they realize they're getting through, and someone's actually paying attention to them, mm-hmm. and that will definitely increase the activity. So even if it's just what we call a Casper case, a regular, typical haunting, but you don't really want any more activity than you currently have, by doing any kind of investigating, you're now asking them and pretty much giving them permission to do more. Mm-hmm. So you're going against what you probably want to have happen to begin with. Mm-hmm. And when people come in here to buy equipment, then we find out they want to buy stuff to investigate their house, we'll try to talk them out as best we can.
Mm-hmm.
If we can't, we give them a card
yeah.
and say, you will be calling us and probably 50% at least become clients because they recorded something that scared the crap out of them. You know, it doesn't take much to really, because you're there 24/7. It's your house.
Sure. The first time you hear "get out" of your, you know, "get out,"
yeah.
well, that's what you're going to want to do. You're going to want to pack up and leave.
It's different when you hear "get out" when you're in someone else's house.
Right.
When it's in your house, your mind doesn't work the same way, rationalizing it. So
why did you ask us about pets? I mean, we know pets are more intuitive, but why did you?
Much more simpler.
A experience with my pet that had passed, and I had written the answer to the question. It was a ferret, and they, you know, ferrets, they have a very distinct odor, but he used to climb up the side of my bed in the middle of the night and under the cover and lay with me, and after he passed, I could feel that same sensation of the covers being,
mm-hmm.
and I just knew it was Jasper coming up and laying on the bed.
So that's the first time I've heard a ferret one. That's cool.
Okay.
So we can add another animal to the list of spirits or
yeah.
animals that come back.
Sure.
But why we ask the question is much more simpler than that. If we showed you all the answers to all the questions, just like put them all side by side of all the second set of questions everyone has answered, the question is answered more in detail and more in depth, usually in paragraph form. Is the pet answer. Because it's so disarming, you don't realize how much you're telling us about yourselves
mm-hmm.
by going off and telling us all about your pets, past, present, future, whatever. I mean, we now know that one of the couples that is in the training group have two fish, the beta fish,
mm-hmm.
Scotty Hartnell yeah. and Claude Giroux.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's just
so,
are they orange and black? That's what I want to know.
Well, they said one was orange and blue was the closest
okay.
thing. But it's like, that's like more information that we got out of all the other questions we were asking them. We didn't get that level of detail. But they gave us the fish names
mm-hmm.
and the rationale for naming them.
And that goes into your personality. That tells us a lot about your personality.
Right.
You know, the kind of animals you have, how in depth you get with your animals. I mean, you know, some people go, you know, their family and the whole nine yards. So that just tells us what kind of person you're going to be in the group.
My last dog I had, the one that I have this year, it was 8 years before I got another dog. I just get too attached to animals.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. See, that's what most people in the group, I think, have pets.
Yeah, at least one, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's something that's almost a common thread, too. Same thing with, like, I guess it's that compassion or something to take care of something else that's totally dependent on you. It's something we look for. The people, I think, and they're mostly mammals, too, I have to say. Fish is a rare example. We do have every once in a while we have the bearded dragon person,
yeah,
or the snake, you know, the snake.
Or what was it? Mike's got the spiders.
The spiders, yeah. Well, they have fur. Spider,
right? Yeah.
Evidently, not for him.
He goes out into like the mountains and stuff and hiking trails to look for snakes and spiders and stuff. He's like, yeah, he can send him pictures of a snake or anything and he can identify it.
Yeah.
So he's like very into that stuff. That's like his way of, like, I guess it's almost like communing with nature. That's his religion, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's where he goes out.
His meditation.
Right.
Yep.
That's his peaceful time.
It reduces stress.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Even though for most of us that would not be an idea of a stress reducer. You know, let's go look for rattlesnakes today. It's probably not on my top list of stress reducing.
No.
So, and then we go through the interviews. Like I said, you guys were interviewed 3 times, even though it only appeared it was like twice. And we make you run around up and down stairs. Very interesting. Some of you caught on, some of you didn't. The people who didn't catch on to, like, for my interview group, we always do something very simple. We have the chair facing different directions, never facing us, to see what people are going to do. And believe it or not, there were people that actually sat facing away from us. Even though afterwards, Mandy would say, she was saying, you can sit any way you feel comfortable, which is pretty much her common answer. When everyone said, can I move the chair, or do you want me to sit down? She said, any way you feel comfortable, you can sit down. Just a very generic answer, no direction in it at all. And one of the interviewees who did not make it actually sat facing away from us, facing outside. So pretty much right there, that was an even shorter interview than the rest of the interviews, because enough said right there. There was no reason to go any further.
Yeah.
Just the fact that she was more comfortable facing away from us was, you know, probably not going to mesh well with the rest of the group.
That'll do.
But that's, I mean, little things like that. Even the book on the floor. I don't know how many of you guys noticed the book on the floor. One person actually picked it up and held it in their hand the whole time. Because they stepped over it. They thought it was on the floor, and they put it on the table. I think it was Deliverance from Evil Spirits was this time. The last interview was this one. This has the exorcism. It's one of the Roman ritual, the volume with the exorcism in it, a real copy of it. That's why it's under glass with a bunch of metals around it, because it was actually used. But we had that sitting on the floor and see how many people would step over it or even just like double take and look back or whatever. Yeah, and so just to see if that was distracting enough to like take away, because some people will sit there and you're talking to you and they're constantly they got to keep going back and looking at the book because it's such a distraction, because the title's like provocative. Mm-hmm. To see, you know, kind of, it's a little way to get in everyone's head almost. And then of course a lot of our questions seem ridiculous.
Like the skirt.
Yeah, I didn't get the skirt one.
It was different than what comedy do you listen to? It was just to see
would you be willing to wear a skirt?
How relaxed? Yeah. Are you going to be that fun person, or are you going to be that, no, oh no, God, no, I'm not, so never, ever, you know, I'm going to get, let anybody in, or, you know.
I started everyone off with the, what if you could be any animal in the world, what would it be?
Well, there you go. All right,
I was sitting down here, I said, I'm going to get a crazy question, like, what animal would you be if you could be any animal at all?
You know what, but that does tell a lot about people, because there's actually some people that can't answer.
Mm-hmm.
They just can't come up with any kind of answer at all. And if you can't give an answer to a question like that, I mean, it's a totally, like, nonsensical question and gives you the ability to pick anything of millions of different creatures, and you can't come up with... I mean, even the one guy came up with it wasn't an amoeba. It was it was the one that begins with a P. It was a...
Paramecium.
That was it.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, he got points for that, I'll tell you, because I was like, wow, that's good. Because there was only like 2 or 3 of us at the table that knew even what that was. So it's like, why? You know? And it was like, yeah, he had actually a rational reason. They explained why. It was like, okay, so you know, you've actually thought about this before. You know? But I mean, the sperm whale answer, too. I mean, the fact that there was a definite reason behind. Because I know someone asked me. I have an answer. I think you probably have an answer, too.
Sure.
It's something that comes up even if you don't even realize it. You have a favorite animal, but it also gives us, again, that little insight to how do you answer questions on the spot that you're not expecting. You're expecting it to be a regular interview. You're not expecting to get these off-the-wall kind of weird questions. Because by that point, we've already got an idea of who you are by your other answers. We're actually interviewing you, and we're also looking inside you while you're sitting there. So that's why some people were quiet and not asking you questions, because they were more or less reading you and seeing what stuff you were giving off. So that could be actually a fourth kind of interview.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I was actually more talkative this time. Normally I'm one of the ones trying to really get inside and focus on you and see what your body language, all the different stuff, what kind of energy you're giving off and all that. And even, you know, everything. The posturing is really how comfortable you are.
Mm-hmm.
How willing you are to say that you're nervous when you're obviously nervous. Some people will do everything to try to hide their nervous. Other people just come sit down like, well, look, I'm really, really nervous. You know, and then, you know, when they start stuttering or they mess up a little bit, then they were able to admit that they're nervous. Admitting that there's something wrong or admitting that you're having a problem is a huge thing in this field. So being able to say to somebody, especially strangers, that, hey, I'm nervous, that matters. So that openness we're looking for. So all the kind of questions that we were doing, we're kind of looking deeper in than it realized, even though the questions seem very silly and looked like they were a total lack of reason behind them all. It was a lot of thought is going into a lot of those questions and why we asked them.
Well, the first time they were asked it, I looked at her and went, really? And she's like, yeah. And I, oh, okay, I get it. Go ahead. Finish answering.
I found the upstairs interview different because you had your side, Dave, and everybody at the table, like, I would say something that I thought was funny, and you all sat there with a straight face. Like, you can't make these people laugh. And I go over on Marty's side, and one of the questions was, would you be willing, or about, you know, the big thing is family. Is your family going to accept that you're going to go out and do this and sit in a dark place with strange people? And it wasn't Marty that answered the question, or asked the question, but it was, would your wife be willing, how would she feel? And I said, my wife really doesn't care as long as I don't bring anybody home with me. And then it was with all these lovely ladies, and there was a guy there, and he was in the background, and he's like, hey. And then I said, well, my wife would probably be upset if the guy was wearing a skirt. And everybody laughed. You know, so I found the two different interviews. That was like the straight-faced interview with, okay, this is what we want, and then the kind of lighthearted interview.
That's all kind of with intent, too.
Yeah.
It's all,
yeah.
We do it so much. It's
straight-faced.
It's kind of like, it's really, it's premeditated to do it that way. Because it keeps you off balance. You don't know what to expect as you're going from room to room to area to area. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking to get you to the point where, because when you're dealing with the paranormal, you're going to be really thrown off on a lot of different things. You're going to get the unexpected thrown at you all the time. How do you react to the unexpected? And normally you have like that split second decision to make. How quickly do you adapt to that situation and overcome it? And that's by those questions kind of what we're looking for. Now, what we do, you guys have got like, you guys only have probably maybe 2/3 of the training dates. So far, there's still training that we didn't even list yet. We're going to be going into September, butting right up into the lecture season, because there was still psychic protection we didn't get scheduled yet.
Yeah.
Date with you, and depending on some of the indoor trainings are going to be dependent on how many people are going and weather too. Some of the historic locations we're going to, we won't go if it's raining, because even though they're inside, we're not going to drag water into a 300-year-old house, because we're not going to be responsible for the damage that may incur, so we cancel outright.
Yeah, cemetery training is always the most fun to get in.
Yeah.
It never seems to fail at either rains or snows.
I think right now we got a spot for cemetery training, which will be very interesting, because it's going to be up in Trenton.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Yeah. Going up there?
So if anybody is in New Jersey and has a carry license, that would be helpful. Because my carry license is only in PA, so I won't be able to be armed.
That's why you have rule number 9. Never go anywhere without a knife.
There you go.
Yeah, bring pepper mace, everything else. So that's good. It's a locked cemetery, and we have the keys to the gate, but people still get in there. So
yeah, because if you look at the rules of South Jersey Ghost Research, you're not allowed to bring weapons with you.
Well, sometimes that happens. Sometimes
yeah, okay.
Actually, we bent the rules before. When we had a North team, we actually had to kind of like overlook that rule, because when you go up to like North Jersey and do cemetery trainings or cemetery investigations, you have the real possibility of encountering a bear. So they needed to be able to at least carry mace, and some of them were, one was a state trooper, another one was a cop, so they would bring their weapons with them just because there was a good chance they might actually need them. So so we had to like kind of like steer around that bylaw there. So you haven't done anything yet except for this, but like you've seen the whole long list, you've seen the email that comes out and tells you everything you need to do. Did you feel overwhelmed with all that list of stuff that needed to be done?
More of a welcome. It was nice, and several of your people emailed, say, hello, welcome, glad to have you here.
That was nice.
And it was very pleasant, and it made us feel very comfortable.
Because every class so far, anyway, someone quits before the first training because it's too much to handle. There's too much stuff for them to do, even though they haven't done anything yet. It never fails. I haven't really been able to pick out who's going to do it yet.
Yeah.
But someone will. And I never understood that, because they haven't done anything yet. And while it seems to be a lot in a short period of time, I mean, it is, but knowing that it's not going to always be like that, it's just for the training. Unfortunately, then your training is going to be ending just around going into the busiest season of the year, so then it'll be even worse then with all the other lectures. Because from end of September all the way through the beginning of November, it's something almost every day, lecture-wise or big event-wise. So the big events, we need like everybody there to help to pull them off. We need like 20 or more people just to make some of these events work. So the more people that we have, the better off we are, because then people actually get to go to the bathroom or stop and breathe for a second. Important things like that.
Little
things. Instead of holding it for like 5-6 hours.
Yeah, it'll be somewhere around Thanksgiving that you'll be able to go, oh, okay.
The bonus of that is you learn a lot more. Mm-hmm. You get an extra whole extra classroom stuff by going to those events, especially the lectures.
Yeah, I started right around lecture season, and it was good.
If you go, you're going to see the people asking the questions. You're going to interact with the public. You're going to see us interact with the public. You're going to see the most commonly asked questions, like our little mini lecture season we have coming up in July. You know, that I said was going to count as classrooms for you if you could attend. Just sitting there and listening is what you're going to pick up, and it, just by osmosis, you learn through going to them. So it's really will only benefit you more.
Yeah, there were a couple questions on the test that I went, oh, I heard that answer. Wait, what was it?
Right. It's either on the video or it's on one of the questions that's always
kind
asked.
Of replay what I sat and listened to over and over and over again, and yeah, that's it. There it is.
Because we do allow, by October, even though you're new, we will let the media talk to you. We will, you know, we will be taught like kind of how to handle it, but we'll let them know that you're new people, so you're not going to be able to answer technical questions a lot, but a lot of the times they want to get that point of view of what it's like for a new person to
why'd you join. Yeah, yeah.
Especially if it's a local, if you're someone local, the local paper might pick it up and they're the ones that want to talk to you specifically, so that happens all the time.
Yeah,
so
I went to a lecture down in Sewell at the Margaret E. Hagan Library, and a newspaper reporter stopped me, and I was just sitting in the lecture and asking, you know, what I thought of it, and you know, questioned me about some of the answers I heard, and so yeah, I can see that happening.
Oh, yeah,
that
it does.
Even more with when we get into October, because that's their busy season. That's they have that mandatory Halloween ghost kind of story they got to cover, so they got to find an interesting twist on it. So sometimes you become the interesting twist.
You ever bring the media with you to an investigation? If it's a public building?
What we do is we'll set up an investigation for the media. If we get requests all the time for them, and we'll set up a specific investigation that's just meant for them to follow us around and interact. So they're not. It gives us an extra opportunity to go into a certain place. So it's almost like another little training for everybody and a little fun event. But they'll follow us around and do stuff. Usually every year we get at least one of them, if not more.
Yeah.
And sometimes even through the events that I run in the store, we'll do it that way too, because I can have... We had a French magazine that's like Time magazine over in Europe, and they went to the Burlington County Prison Museum with us, and they did a whole thing, and she followed me around the whole night, and we got to see how we did things. That's a common thing, too. The training, though, what we add to it that you won't see anywhere else, that you're going to get the benefit of having. It's not just, like I told you guys, I can teach anybody how to use the equipment. I've already taught kids how to use the equipment, and they seem to grasp it faster than adults do. So
my son?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is it the light, the Burlington County? Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of equipment, and how to use it properly is important. You know, but it's a matter of, can you count like the 10? You know, can you hear the buzzer going off? Can you see the lights flashing? Can you tell time? Can you read temperature? If you can do basic things like that, then you can pretty much, if you can work at a fast food restaurant, you're qualified at least to do that. Mm-hmm. Hear bells, whistles, and no timers, then you can handle all the ghost equipment, okay? It's the other stuff on top of that, how to do the investigations, how to interact with the people that are in the houses, the how to interact from the point of when they contact us to after we've done the investigation, how to do all that. That almost no one teaches you, because most of the other groups don't do that. They don't follow through. They're in it out there to try to do an investigation, and more or less it's for themselves to try to prove ghosts exist, that and all that. They're not really there to help the people.
Right.
You know, we flip it around. And the psychic protection class, which we call when we give it in the store, we call it the psychic protection and paranormal self-defense class. But it's basically the same thing. It's something you could use all the time, every day. You're going to encounter people you already do, that you work with, neighbors or family or anything. They rub you the wrong way. They don't, you know, you don't like being around them. They make you feel bad when they're around them. That's because you're picking up on their energy. It either clashes with you or they're overly negative. That psychic protection class will teach you how to deal with all that stuff. People wind up using it every day. And one of the things we teach is that you don't use it just on cases.
Right.
You use it throughout your whole life.
You have to use it every day. And the more you do this, the more open you become. So the more you need it, not the less. You know, you need to use it on a daily basis, because the more work you do in this field, the more open you become to the energies around you.
And some people get all crazy because we talk, it's a psychic defense, and all, they think it's all crazy stuff. It could be simple as something like Marty wearing the crystals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they're just pretty stones she has on her wrist and not doing anything, okay, well, she likes how they look. Or if it's psychosomatic, and because she believes they're doing something, it works, well, then it works. Or if they really have the certain vibrations that actually do what the properties of the crystal say they do, like, you know, protect from negative energy or help cleanse and clear areas around you, stuff like that, and it works. So, you know, that's how I didn't believe in all that stuff in the beginning, even with the crystals. And I started using them because I ran out of other options. Because I thought I used to call it hocus pocus, mumbo jumbo kind of stuff.
You got rocks in your pocket. Yeah.
So I put
to go with the rocks.
Yeah. So I put some more rocks in my bag, put it in my pocket, and I started noticing, wow, they actually worked. So that actually would start. I started collecting them anyway. I used to have like a rock collection when I was younger, like the little polished stones. So I picked up the ones I liked, and I would just grab them at random when I would go on an investigation, put them in the bag, and go. And then after the investigation, I know what I went through and what I kind of needed. Mm-hmm. Then I would go back and pick out the stones I picked at random and read what their properties were. And I kept being surprised that I was picking exactly the right stones I needed for that case. So I'm like, okay, that can't be psychosomatic now, because I did not look up beforehand which ones I should bring. I just picked whichever ones I was drawn to. So there was something to it to me. And there's other methods, well, just visualization. There's other things, whether it's faith-based. There's so many different ways we give people. And people eventually come around. Normally the people who don't do it eventually wind up coming around and doing it, because they have something happen at an investigation where they get shook up enough where we ask them, so what were you doing to protect yourselves? And, oh, well, nothing really. And then we go, okay, well, now you've learned what it's like not to protect yourself. Now we'll try it with the protection and see if it's different. And they normally find out. I mean, we even have local police officers that come in here that have used some of the crystals and some of the other methods because they found out it works. They keep their stones in their locker. When they go on duty, they put them in their pocket, you know. Even Kristen, she was our assistant director for years. She's been in the group for like 10 years. She's a consultant now. She worked at the library. Now she's a nurse, but she hated working at the library. She hated dealing with the clientele that was coming in. That's why she finally quit and went back to nursing school. But like when she first took the protection class, she tried to bring some of those stones with her to work. And she found at the end of the day, she didn't feel as drained or as angry as she did normally, although nothing in the work environment had changed. So she just kept bringing them. And it didn't matter to her whether it was psychosomatic or really happening. It worked. So that's something that you won't see other groups really do too much either.
Hmm.
The preternatural training, which is a fancy word for the dark side of ghost hunting, or the bad stuff that you could run into. Well, that was something we used to teach after you've been in the group for a year. But because we do a lot of that now, just because, only because people contact us. I mean, we really don't advertise, we handle that kind of case as much. But we get a lot of those type of cases. So we like to let everyone know from training on kind of what warning signs there are, what things you need to be aware of. And so I don't know if you've taken it here. I know Mike Williams did.
Yeah.
There's a couple of the trainees already have taken that class here. But it's something that, it's a different, every time you take it, it's a little bit different. But it gives you this stuff, and yes, we're going to use the demon word and all that other kind of stuff. But it gives you that other information that you should know about. Because there's too many people going out there, like watch TV. You see these guys yelling and screaming at things that they don't know what it is. And I say what it is, not who it is. Because it's disrespectful to provoke, because that's someone's, you know, mother, father, sister, brother, you know, some of the places they're at, like we do, a lot of places,
yeah.
Ex-military members that fought and gave their lives for the country that you're now insulting, or it's something, you know, that maybe it's not a good idea to, you know, poke the hornet's nest, you know, or stir things up. You're not going to be happy with the consequences. So all those kind of things that other groups don't really go into. We have groups that come to us for that
we
class.
Do. Yeah.
But I teach the whole class.
Aren't they opening themselves up to being disturbed by these spirits later on?
Sure.
The people who do the provoking?
People? Sure.
Yes. Yes. Yes, definitely. But the sad part about it is, some, like especially like with these groups and with the shows, but more the groups, because at least the shows are there for a longer period of time, a lot of that's for show. But the groups that see that on TV and think that's okay, I'm dealing with a reverend now who, the woman who runs the seminary I'm going to, put me in touch with her because she knows I do this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And they were actually insulting the thing they think is a demon, and was then trying to get it to manipulate things, like turn the flashlight on and off. So they were actually wanting to manifest physically and do things for it. It's like, you know, all the worst case scenario things you could possibly think to do, they were all doing. And she felt she was okay because she's ordained. And it's like, well, I got news for you, you know.
That doesn't stop them.
Pick and choose.
Right, exactly.
Nope.
If not, that makes you more of a target,
sure,
than less of one.
Sure.
So we can no longer do this through email. Now I have to call her and deal with everything she's going through because they weren't getting the message. And it's already, they've already stirred up the pot to where they're having issues now. Multiple people are having stuff happening at their houses now. So they've gone... They're now seeing the consequences of this. So now it's going to.
When I saw that on TV, I went, "Oh no, you shouldn't be doing that." And
but
I got all the.
Think about the fact that crew packs up at the end of the shoot and goes home.
Yeah.
But even if it's a public place like a museum, mm-hmm, what about the workers who work there? They come in there every day now. They've stirred the pot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or private houses, they stirred the pot. You can't do that because you're leaving those people at their mercy, and that's the one thing that I call the mantra of what I teach when I give many of my classes. And it usually flashes up on my slideshows a bunch of different times,
mm-hmm,
is we get to go home at the end of the night. The people who are there or work there have to stay.
Yeah.
So that is the main thing we must consider. All the actions that we do on an investigation, that always has to be in the front of our mind, that we're going to leave in a few hours. There's going to be people that are going to be here after us. What are we leaving for them? And that has to guide us through the whole investigation.
Yeah.
And that's, again, another unique point of view when you look at the overall world of ghost hunting that you won't see a lot of out there, unfortunately. Things are changing. There are more groups that think like this now. And the more, that's why I'm starting to do the conferences now,
mm-hmm,
and be doing speaking more and working on another two books, actually, now, and trying to get the word out, doing even through the classes here, trying to reach more and more people. That the more people that can learn how to do this stuff right, the more they're going to teach it to other people. So I think that the tide is turning. It's not as bad as it used to be, but it's still, you know, I'd say 50-50 now at this point.
Yeah, it's still there.
That's what drew me to SJGR was from listening to the radio show and meeting you guys at the Burlington Library, that you guys do the training, because I was at an investigation at Fort Mifflin. It was one of those paranormal sleeping with the ghost type thing.
Uh-huh.
And they had all kinds of groups there. Pararex Radio was there. You guys might have been there. I don't remember. And I met a woman from a group and looked her up online and wanted to get involved with her. And sat down, had an interview. It was a one-on-one interview. It was at a local mall. And the one question was, do you have any of your own equipment? I said, no. And have you had any training? And I said, no. And I never got a thank you email, or not so much a thank you email, but an email saying, listen, we're going in a different direction. We're already filled up with investigators. I didn't get any kind of response. And so I said, all right, well, I'm just going to hang out. And then there was another group that I was talking to one of their group leaders recently. And I said, hey, I'm going to try to get involved with SJGR, and good luck. And if it doesn't work out, you can come with us. And so I asked him, I said, well, do I need any kind of training? He said, no training. And I was like, oh, okay. And like I said, from listening to the radio show and Dave and Marty, and you don't know what you're getting involved with. And, you know, even when I tell people, like my wife, who's kind of skeptical, and she's it, and I came home and I said, I got all this stuff to do. And she says, she rolls her eyes and says, why? And I said, you don't know what you're getting involved with. And like I said, she's kind of skeptical, and that's why I always say I don't want to bring nothing home.
Yeah. Well, I tell, when I do my class, the first thing I tell them is, he's not going to shake your hand and say, hi, I'm Lucifer. He's going to suck you in. He's going to bring you in. I'm a little kid. I'm a, you know, old lady needs help. You know, help me move on, whatever the case may be. And once they got you sucked in, then they take over. You know, it's not going to be the, hi, I'm the devil. Want to play?
Yeah. And even with the human spirits that are, you know, malicious. I mean, they keep the personalities they have in
mm-hmm.
life. So just think of everyone you know. There are certain people that you wouldn't necessarily want to run across as someone now who's invisible and you can't see that can mess with
you.
Can
sneak up on you, yeah.
I mean, they already have that, you know, that malicious intent to just to mess with people. So you don't, you really need to know what you're getting into. And that's why we make it 3 months of a minimum. We make you go out on test investigations, like indoor trainings. And we do, it really is like a military boot camp. A lot of you will be very angry with me, and, you know, you won't understand. I tell this from the very beginning when we do the first few trainings. I'll remind everybody that you will not understand the reason why anyone is doing anything that we're doing right now until after you complete a training. The people who wind up quitting in the middle or let go for whatever reasons, they never find out the reason. They usually wind up just, I'm just
mm-hmm.
evil, you know.
Do you guys ever give any kind of training on interpreting dreams or working with people that get a lot of information through dreams?
There are people that teach classes in the group and teach that kind of thing,
yeah.
And you're always free to take the classes to learn. Yep.
But there's something that comes into a lot of the training anyway, because one of the easiest way for spirits to communicate with us is through our dreams.
Sure, that's when we're most relaxed.
And you can usually tell the difference, really. I call them lucid dreaming, because the dream is more realistic than your average dream.
Mm-hmm.
And we dream every night. Everybody dreams every night.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you remember a dream is significant to begin with, because
mm-hmm.
you think, if you dream every night, how many do you actually remember? And if it's one of those ones that's really vivid, sometimes it wasn't a dream. It was easier for the spirit to communicate and get the message through.
Yeah.
Like I used to say, like, you know, great Aunt Mary, you know, didn't want to pop in your bedroom at the foot of your bed to tell you a message, because you probably were going to, like, get up and run out of the room or hide under the covers or whatever. But through your dream, she could, you're in a relaxed state, you're more likely to sit and listen to what she actually has to say.
Sure, you're going to get up thinking, wow, what was that all about?
Yeah, why did
you know,
about her?
You're going to wonder what it was all about and try and remember it, as opposed to them coming in and saying, hey, can we listen?
And then some people's psychic abilities also deals with dreams too,
mm-hmm.
where it's premonitions, where people see things in advance, and it's a lot of times it's through like either a regular dream state or a daydream kind
mm-hmm.
of vision, and that's something that's kind of common too that a lot of people who
yeah.
have abilities do.
The reason I ask is because I have very, as you say, lucid dreams, and they vivid, and I remember them for years afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes something will happen the next day or later on in my life, and something will just flash back to that dream. And I'm wondering if it doesn't always spell out what's going to happen, but it will give me some type of understanding of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just hoping, you know, that you had some kind of training on that.
It could also be guidance you're getting too from a spirit guide or the angels or another, just another family member or friend that's giving you that guidance that something you need to know later on down the road. And it's sometimes it's hard for us to trust that, but when you make the connection that, okay, I remember that and it makes sense now, you get more comfortable and more relaxed and it becomes more easier to understand.
So do you have a lot of cases where family members are trying somehow to communicate with their living family?
That happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually the easiest kind of ones to deal with because if you can figure out it's a family member, a lot of times we might not even have to do an investigation.
No, the person will relax and just start to listen or just start to pay attention. You know, they're easier to relax that way to know it's family. You know, if it's somebody that used to live in the house, then it's like, well, why are they still here?
Mm-hmm. See, that's why we get the questionnaires in. Then we also do a preliminary visit where we visit with the people to review the questionnaire. So we meet them face-to-face in their house and the environment that everything's happening. If we can solve the problem right there and not do an investigation, that's still a win. We've mm-hmm. helped the people. Whatever, what's it, question 51 now
mm-hmm.
on our questionnaire? Because we added more questions. So it's 51 questions now on our questionnaire. The last question is, what would you like to see from our involvement with your situation? That's the goal. Whatever they answer there is our goal. And we don't stop until we reach that goal. So if we can reach it at the first visit where we're not even doing an investigation, where we're just sitting down talking with them,
mm-hmm.
we've solved the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we're able to move on. Because sometimes it's people, they just want that, I'm not crazy, am I, kind
right.
of deal.
Right.
And everything is pointing to a family member, you know, overwhelmingly. And they just needed someone else to say that, you're not crazy, and yeah, I agree. It looks like it's a family member too, and that one in particular. And then they're okay. We don't need to invade their house with all a bunch of equipment and spend time in the dark and everything, because that's not going to help them. What they needed to know,
mm-hmm.
we already helped them what they needed to know. That's why it's like we've handled over 250 cases last year. I lost track after the 250 number.
Yeah, it's, but I like, think it was a little bit.
Did
more
we
than
do
that.
250 investigations? No,
mm-mm.
We probably did about 100. So that's 150 that we didn't have to go do investigations for. That's a huge amount. Other groups look at it another way. The more cases we can get, and the more times we can stop SJGR from stealing all the cases, because there's only a finite amount of ghosts out there, and they're getting them all. I mean, the big kids on the block get blamed for that all the time. We hog up all the ghosts, you know. It's like, yeah, I don't think... funeral directors and ghost hunters are never going to be out of jobs. Okay?
No.
There's always going to be some, you know. What's the other kind of, I guess, the training with the, we do the indoors? A lot of the classroom stuff, too. It tends to be a little boring, but we go over, like, how to interview clients. The questionnaire seems like it's very generic. Actually, if you listen to the show, it was like, what it takes, three shows
to get
now, for the thing in Gettysburg in August, I have to fit that whole thing into 45 minutes, and I have no idea how I'm doing it. I might have to ask for more time.
Yeah.
Because I don't see how I'm even going to get the highlights in 45 minutes.
No, you'd have to skip over, half of the questions.
But it seems like a very generic questionnaire, very cut and dry. But really, there are hidden answers in there, or hidden ways to take the answers that tell you a lot more about the person than they're willing to admit to you. Like, I always use the alcohol one's a good one.
Yeah.
You know, do you drink? You know, or do you drink heavily? You know, believe it or not, people answer that stuff honestly. They answer mm-hmm. the illegal drug stuff honestly too. They lie on medication. They lie about the Ouija board,
mm-hmm.
but they'll tell you that they're going to the psychiatrist, they're on all these pills, they drink heavily, and they smoke pot. They have no problem telling you that. But when did they start doing that? Did they start drinking heavily before the activity or after the activity started? Now the same thing with
makes a big difference.
When did they? Okay, they're on medication for anxiety now. Okay, that's common though. A lot of people are, but did they get a prescription after the activity started? And then you look down of how do they feel about the activity, and they mm-hmm. put just curious. Well, that's when the BS meter goes off, and go, okay, if you're just curious, but you were that nervous enough that you went and had to get a prescription for anxiety medication, you're a little more than just curious then. Mm-hmm. But it's hard for people to admit that they're afraid, especially to strangers.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we get that little added clue in there, that now we have a little bit more insight into what they're thinking, even though they don't realize it. We've interrogated them much deeper than they realize they've been interrogated. And it's in a friendly way. It's not in a way that's overly invasive where we're sitting down and it's like, you're lying to us. I know you're afraid, you know. And a lot of groups will do that too. They simply don't know how to, it's a matter of how to communicate with people. And it's kind of like the diplomacy kind of thing.
Make them comfortable to sit and talk with you and give you the information you need to so that you can help them out properly.
Right, because if they're willing to, I mean, that's the first thing when we have a case where someone isn't being as forthcoming as maybe they should be. I tell them that we have to know everything before we can help them. If they're not willing to let us know everything at all, then we can't help them. Simple as that. Sometimes I have to be blunt.
So it's almost like sitting in on the interview to get in the group.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is.
And we ran right up against the end of the time here.
Yeah, we did.
That was quick.
That's good.
So thanks, everyone, for listening. We're going to do more of these roundtables, too. We're going to get more of the group and other groups involved coming out. And hopefully we're going to be doing more of the shows live.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause so far, except for my not recording on time, we seem to work out the glitch this time when we connected. So we'll see you next week. And make sure you check the webpage, too, because we're going to have some more guests listed. And we'll let you know what's happening in advance each week now, too. We'll try to get on top of that and keep that up to date.
And thanks to the trainees who showed up and hung out and didn't run away. I was very impressed. It was a good start. Thanks for talking with us.
And we will talk to you.